Hi, this is Nadine Dietz, host of CMO Moves. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thanks so much for stopping by today and to give you a quick overview on what to expect. CMO Moves is all about game-changing leaders, their incredible journeys, the moves that they've made, and most importantly, their personal stories of how they got to be the leaders of some of the world's most exciting brands. I hope you'll enjoy their stories as much as I do and take away a few tips and some inspiration for your day. Enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to CMO Moves. Today I am here at Brand Week in Palm Springs and I have a very special guest with me. It is Jill Gregory, the CMO of NASCAR. Jill, hi and welcome to CMO Moves.
Hi, Nadine. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. I've been waiting to have you on the show now for quite some time and you have been, wow, super busy all over the place and I can't wait to hear more about what you're up to. But before we jump into that, tell me a little bit about why you decided to take on this role as CMO of NASCAR.
Well, I mean, it's an amazing time for NASCAR right now. We are undergoing a tremendous kind of shift in momentum and how we're going to market. I mean, if you think about NASCAR, fast cars, you know, the sights, the sounds, the spectacles, always just a huge show. But we're really doing some things on the marketing and content side that are bringing more fans and more fans closer to the sport. So it's been a great season for us and we're getting ready to wrap it up. We got two races to go, huge championship battle brewing. And so there's just a lot of exciting things going on.
So I can't wait to dig into all those cool things, but I have to ask you before we even do that. I mean, I think it's on everybody's mind. You are a female CMO in what used to be considered a very male-dominated industry, and maybe a little bit still, but wow, how exciting, and what is that like?
Well, it's amazing. I love my job. I love the sport. The things that we're doing right now to push the sport forward and reach more fans, it's one of the most energizing times to be a part of NASCAR, but NASCAR's got female fans. We've got a driver core that is younger and more diverse than it's ever been before. Our fans come from all walks of life. So being the female CMO isn't something that really occurs to me. It's just how do you take this great sport that has so many different fans and viewpoints and things to offer and bring it to more and more people every day?
Yeah, very exciting. Were you always in sports?
Yes, I was always a sports fan growing up. I'm one of three daughters. I had a dad in particular that loved sports, not NASCAR, to be honest, but I was just involved in sports early on in my career, and it was at a time when NASCAR was experiencing some phenomenal growth, and so it just was an opportunity, and kind of in this mantra of, well, give it a try, get outside of your comfort zone, I jumped in, and I've been here for probably longer than I would have expected.
Okay, well, what are some of the key changes that you've seen along the way?
So I took on the marketing role about 2 years ago now, and I think one of the things that we wanted to do is challenge the status quo and turn our marketing upside down. And not necessarily that anything was broken, but we did have some things that we wanted to address, and we wanted to bring the sport closer to the fans, provide more innovative touch points. You know, we know that our fans love to go to the race and love to watch on television, but there was a whole new world and places and ways to touch those fans, whether it was through social media, through video content, through new product offerings. And so we had done marketing in a fairly traditional fashion for many of the years before I got there. And we kind of jumped in and said, okay, what if we kind of put this all on its head and try to approach it a different way? And so we're seeing the results of some of that come through right now, and we're having a phenomenal year.
Wow. Okay, that's wonderful. And as you think about different ways to engage those fans, I'm sure you're sampling with lots of different technology, platforms, strategies. Like, is there something that's really exciting that you're doing right now that you think is going to change the game?
Well, I don't know how much time you have. We have a bunch of different things going on. But we know our fans kind of had consumed the sport in a fairly traditional way. We have great media partners and we have a great live event experience, but not everybody could watch on television or come to a live event. So we had to bring NASCAR to fans either that knew they wanted it, but it wasn't in the format that they wanted it, or didn't even know that they were missing NASCAR. But if we put our content and our drivers and the excitement of what we do in front of them, then we knew we can make them fans for life. The great thing about NASCAR, there's so much happening at a race. You've got these 200-mile-an-hour race cars. You've got drivers with all these personalities. But you can deliver that in many different ways. So really taking a different approach to every way, every channel that we were promoting NASCAR and having a slightly different tone in the content that we put out on Facebook versus Twitter versus Snap, you know, getting the fans involved in generating their own content. I don't know if you've been to a race. If not, we're going to get you to one because it's almost sensory overload. There are storylines and things happening throughout the entire event. So not just about the cars on the racetrack, but the entire experience. So we've got this treasure trove of content out there each weekend, and we got more aggressive in collecting that content and publishing it in different ways so that we could put it in front of as many fans as possible.
That's great. And, you know, it reminds me too, I did a podcast recently with Julie Duncan from Jacksonville Jaguars and Daniel Cherry from Activision Blizzard Esports. And they were talking about that intersection of esports and fan engagement, fan experience, and how there's so much happening online, and the online is now coming in person events, and in person is going online.
Absolutely.
So how do you think about that in your world?
Well, it's a huge opportunity for us, more so than any other sport, I think, because one of the things that we always look at is you can't just go play NASCAR in the backyard, right? Mm-hmm. So you can go throw a football, you can play catch, you've got fans, particularly young fans, that grow up knowing the rules of the game, if you will. So unless you've got a really nice set of parents that let you go drive your family car around the neighborhood, it's hard to replicate the NASCAR experience in the traditional way. So what esports does is gives us that opportunity. You can sit inside of a race car. You can feel what it's like, what a driver feels when they're in the car, and have real competition on tracks that our professional drivers race on. So we have a huge esports presence. We've got two main platforms. We've got iRacing and the NASCAR Heat Pro League series. So there are different touch points depending on what kind of gamer you are. But, you know, an interesting anecdote about our iRacing platform, one of our drivers who competes in our top series today in the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series, he won the pole of the Daytona 500, got his start at a relatively older age for a driver, iRacing, developed his skills, got his experience doing iRacing and competing in our iRacing series. He sat on the pole of the Daytona 500. So it's a story that showcases that the gaming aspect of NASCAR can actually put you into the competition. So I'm going to say there's probably not a lot of players out there that can really do well at NBA 2K and then can go start for the Lakers. But in our case, you can gain your skills engaging with NASCAR through iRacing and through gaming, and then you could actually compete on our field of play. So it's a kind of an interesting twist for how important esports is for us.
That's amazing. And way safer than stealing your parents' car.
Way safer.
Because I will tell you, my parents did not let me take the car, but it somehow miraculously found itself in some interesting positions.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, very cool. Let's go back a little bit, because I want to know, how did you get to where you are today? I mean, you started someplace, and now you're the CMO of one of the most exciting sports league. Like, how does that happen?
A lot of hard work and a lot of unexpected bold moves, which I think is part of what you hear about on your podcast. I'm a fan. So I always love to hear kind of the different twisty, turny ways that people have landed in their position, which is kind of the benefit of what you're doing. But, you know, I was not a NASCAR fan growing up. I've said it before, probably frowned upon by some folks, but I grew up in Northern California. At that time, not a huge hotbed of NASCAR. We had a few races on the West Coast, but kind of compared to today, where LA is one of our most dynamic and strong markets, when I was growing up, NASCAR wasn't something that was top of mind. But sports marketing always was. You know, at the time that I was going through college or even early in my career, I did a lot of agency work, so had a ton of great training in how to manage clients, manage brands, and sports was a theme and something that using sports to help market your brand was always of interest to me, and it was where my early start became. And then at the time that kind of NASCAR was going through a really phenomenal growth period, I had the opportunity to work for a couple of brands that used NASCAR to to promote and to sell product. And so, you know, one of the things about NASCAR that we love to talk about is the loyalty of our fans. And you can see it at the race when you're there every weekend, like the commitment they make. They come and tailgate for a week instead of a day. They're there camping, they're wearing all of their driver gear. It's kind of an immersive experience. And that fan loyalty, I saw it work when I had some early experience with brands like Texaco, which you would make sense to be in racing, but also with, you know, Nextel and other brands. They could tap into the strength of that fan base, and our fans reward the brands that sponsor us. So whether that's NASCAR, the league, or the drivers, the fans reward brands that are with us by their purchasing behavior and their support. And that's something that we love to talk about because it makes brands really interested in being a part of our sport.
Yeah, I see it all the time. You can really feel that connectivity to it. And let's talk about the drivers for a minute too. I mean, drivers, you know, you look at the cars and they're covered with different logos and you look at their jumpers and do you call them jumpers?
We don't call them jumpers. No.
What do you call them? What are they?
Driver suits, fire suits.
Fire suits. See, look at that fire suit.
See, much more marketing focus.
That is way cooler.
Way better than a jumper.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I agree. So your drivers in their fire suits even have sometimes so many different logos. Like, how do you figure that out? How does that work?
Well, I think that, you know, again, there are a ton of brands that are interested in NASCAR because that strength of that fan base, you know, 75 million fans that all vote with their wallets and their purchasing decisions is huge for us. But you have to enter into partnerships that make sense. So there are a ton of different entry points for a brand wanting to get involved with NASCAR. Sometimes a brand needs visibility. So when I was at Nextel, this was in 2004, is the first season, that they needed brand recognition. They wanted to make a big splash. This is when telecom was just exploding, and Nextel was a kind of a relatively small niche brand. It was trying to compete with the AT&Ts and Verizons of the world, and doing a multi-million dollar sports sponsorship to own every aspect of the sport of NASCAR, taking over for Winston, was a huge benefit for them. They wanted that visibility. Many of the brands that are with us today, either with the league or with drivers, everybody knows the brands that are involved. You know, everybody knows M&M's, everybody knows Busch Beer, but they want that connection, that personal connection with their fans. So they will pick a driver that has a strong connection to their customer. You can pick a geography and want to reach fans in a certain location. So you might do a track sponsorship. So there are a ton of different touch points. And what we're able to do as a league is figure out what's the right partnership, what's the brand want to get out of it, and how do we create a good mix of assets that can help them drive their business.
Yeah, fascinating. It's like matchmaking.
Yes.
Yes.
And some brands and drivers will be a fit and some will not, and you know early on, because you know it's good for us to lean in on that, because you want the sponsorship to be successful. If you're not going to move some product or drive some brand equity, then it's not going to work for anybody. So we want to put the right people with the right brands and then sell.
Yeah. Well, so speaking of sometimes not being the right fit, how do you know that? What's a red flag that goes up for you that maybe causes you to take a different action?
You know, I think it's all about authenticity. I mean, we're using data and insights in every piece of our business and kind of how the fans reacting to a given partnership or a driver. You know, our fans are very passionate. They're not as afraid to share their opinions, like many consumers. So we'll let the data will kind of tell us, but it's all about authenticity. And if you're trying to put a partnership together that is a brand and a driver personality that are just not in sync, the fans are going to sniff that out very quickly and know that that's kind of a paid partnership. So if you've got a brand like Busch Beer, for example, who they've got a personality, they've got a core consumer very in line with who our core fans are, you have a driver, a veteran driver, tough, authentic, like Kevin Harvick. And when they do promotions that promote Busch Beer, they're doing customized paint schemes that are dedicated to Kevin Harvick. His fans and the Busch Beer consumers are the same group, and it feels very natural. So you look for those connection points so that the fans understand that this is an authentic connection versus something that is kind of just a paid partnership.
Yeah. Wow. So I'm so glad you're talking about authentic connection. But let's talk about you for a second, and let's talk about your career and your fits. You know, we were talking earlier about culture ad and culture fit. And nowadays, we really like to talk about people who can bring culture additive dynamic to the group. But sometimes it's just the wrong fit. Like, and have you ever experienced that?
Yeah, one of the things that I think has been helpful throughout my career is kind of the ability to try different positions, different brands, different cities. So always with a sports angle or kind of a sports lens. But, you know, I had spent a lot of time working in NASCAR and in sports, and I took a position in the financial services category, and a great position. It was kind of at the time, I thought it was an opportunity to maybe get out of the day-to-day execution and really start to look at sports a little bit more strategically. But when I joined the company, you know, there had been some leadership changes, and I could tell early on that maybe it wasn't going to be the fit. I wasn't going to have the ability to affect change like I thought I would. You know, you really have to take a step back and think, okay, I went into this new opportunity, you know, do all the pros and cons and the analysis before you take a new job, and kind of what you think that it's going to be and what your experience can bring. And I could tell fairly early on that it wasn't going to be, the opportunity wasn't going to be what I thought it was. So, you know, from that point on, you think of, okay, one, how do I continue to do the best job I can and perform and keep my professional focus on the job at hand, but also what does make me tick? What type of opportunity would be intriguing, knowing that, you know, you're going to have to start transitioning to what is the next opportunity? And so, you know, it was really a little bit of more soul searching than I'm apt to do, because it's like, okay, we've tried this. It's probably not going to work out long term. So immediately, what are the plans to figure out what you want to do next? And so I had to, you know, take some time. And luckily, about 18 months later, I had the opportunity, and it was the opportunity at NASCAR.
Wow.
And so there were a couple of benefits there. I was already in Charlotte, and we opened a Charlotte division within NASCAR to really focus on our industry, teams, tracks, and drivers. As moms like to say, everything happens for a reason, or at least my mom does. So everything happened for a reason. I got some really great experience in that sector, you know, very deep immersion into the financial services field, but then also could take those skills and move to the league, where I have been able to put that learning into action and really evolve what we're doing at NASCAR.
That's fantastic. And you know, it's interesting because we spent the last 2.5 days in the room that we're sitting in now. This is the room where we had the C-suite track. Yeah. And we had a lot of deep conversations around a lot of different things that impact CMOs. But one thing that kept popping up was around the role of the CMO.
Right.
And how much that's evolved and changed. And so I was wondering if you could share with us, as CMO, what are all the functions that are in your purview?
Right. Well, I think CMO isn't really descriptive of all of the things, all of the initiatives, projects, thing, you know, personnel issues that come across your desk. It's a very visible piece, and it's, you know, very consumer focused or fan focused. But at least from my experience, CMO, it's not just marketing. It's marketing, media, communications, content, analytics, and insights. And it's also a thought leader within the organization. And, you know, having all of those functions under, you know, one CMO is helpful, but it also puts that CMO, myself, into a position where you are influencing internal behavior, culture, employee retention, the vision of the company, because you've got a lot of the tools, you've got the consumer touch points, but you're also, that's the expectation. Like, you're going to set the tone and the emotional connection to the fan and the consumer. You need to be doing that internally as well. So, and I think the role, as it's evolved from traditional marketing for us, into content, into digital, into social, that's been a natural progression. I know one that other CMOs are seeing, but I think if we could find a new definition for CMO that is more encompassing, from what I see with my peers, it's much more than that.
Yeah, exactly what we've been talking about for days. And it's interesting because the question then becomes, is the role chief marketing officer the right actual title for the role? And more on that to come, because there's a lot of debate on that. Having said that, we all are in agreement that it's never been more exciting to be a marketer. And it's been a wonderful journey, and the extended and expanded leadership roles and capabilities of a CMO are really what's actually empowering and driving innovation today, because it's about the teams. Yeah. And it's, yes, it is about the consumers always, but it's about the people on your teams that are going to bring it to life and in an authentic way, as you said. So one question for you about your teams, and then we're going to be coming up to the end of our time today, which is unfortunate. How do you think about your teams? I mean, you've got such this incredible, strong culture on the outside. How do you think about how that lives and breathes on the inside?
Yeah, I think that I've always been a big believer in empowering my team, whoever they are. We hire good, talented people for a reason, and you need to allow them to do their job, show their experience, show diversity of thought, challenge the status quo. I know personally for our organization that maybe always hasn't been the culture. You know, for many years it was, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, and kind of just keep your stewardship of the sport, in our case, solid and on the right track. But, you know, we've really had to cultivate leaders that are willing to try new things, be more innovative, and that's a different type of empowerment. So let them do their jobs, be there to support when needed, but don't micromanage, and let the vision that your team has, be incorporated into the vision that the company has. And sometimes that's easier to do, but it's something you have to work at, just like you have to work at your core plans and your core KPIs.
Yeah. Great. Well, okay. So as you were evolving in your marketing role and leadership capabilities, what tips that you would now give to others to help folks involve in their own journeys? Yeah.
One of the things that I've had to do is get a lot more comfortable with letting your people fly and delegating. You know, I think that early on in my career, I was very focused on perfection and getting everything right. And I think that there are a lot of driven people that are in the CMO world. If your podcast clientele is any indicator, there's a reason why people have risen to the top of their profession. You have to let some things go to get there, and that's sometimes out of your comfort zone. So I don't know who said this to me, but it's been said before, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. And you've got to let your people contribute and give them independence and the ability to fail. And I think that's something that many of us aren't comfortable with, because it's not what got us here. But that freedom to innovate, that freedom to try new things, and hey, what about insert great marketing concept here? And it might not be even a marketing concept. It might just be a different approach, a diversity of thought. And that's something that we really try to cultivate, is the ability to think differently and challenge the status quo. And it seems very simple and somewhat elementary, but it's what we are doing every day, is taking a look at all the different functions and initiatives that we have and trying to take a critical eye, not because anything's wrong, but if we're not constantly evolving and constantly changing, then we'll be left behind. So we want to go after it.
I love that. And I wrote that down. I'm going to probably quote that somewhere later today, and probably
fantastic
often,
yes,
and frequently. So don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good.
Yeah.
Did I get that right?
That's right.
Excellent. Okay. Well, Jill, my final question for you today, if you weren't a CMO and money and talent were no object, you could be anything in the world, do anything in the world, what would you do?
This is an easy one. I would be a winemaker in the Napa Valley. Just full stop, out making wines for people to enjoy and enjoying a little bit of it myself.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'm in that with you. And I know I have a friend. She's also probably going to want to join us. It's Allegra O'Hare, CMO of Gap.
Great.
She's got her sommelier license in her back pocket. So I bet if we asked a lot of my guests if they would want to be in the wine industry, we might get a few takers.
I think so. So maybe not tremendously original, but something that I've always had in my head. And, when I do my first bottling, I will let you know.
I'll be there. Well, Jill, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been so much fun having you on the show.
Thank you for having me. This has been great.
Thank you so much for tuning in today. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, I would love your help in sharing CMO Moves with one of your friends or colleagues who you think might enjoy it too. And if you have time, I would really love your review or ratings on Apple or SoundCloud. So thanks again and have a great day.